يا حيف يا حيف يا حيف يا حيف يا حيف اخ ويا حيف زخ رصاص على الناس العزل يا حيف واطفال بعمر الورد اعتقلن كيف زخ رصاص على.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Dr. Muraf Shuhajati, who is a Syrian-born specialist on Middle East affairs, particularly Syrian politics. He's currently a professor of Middle East studies at the National Defense University's Near East South Asia Center for Strategic Studies. And he's also a lecturer in political science and international affairs at George Washington University, as well as a scholar at the Middle East Institute in Washington, D.C. Welcome to Background Briefing, Muraf Shuhajati.
Thank you very much.
And I must say that we've, so far from the former CIA officer Robert Baer and from Vali Nasser, who served in the Obama administration, a very pessimistic picture of the general regional potential for a vast conflict breaking out, not just in terms of Israel threatening to attack Iran, but Iran feeling paranoid and squeezed by sanctions and striking out. And into this mix, you have these two very volatile neighborhoods that Iran's involved in, the Assad dictatorship under siege from within, and the very shaky government in Iraq. So with that as a predicate, into this mix, you have a Russian naval flotilla docking at the Syrian port of Tartus. You have an American naval flotilla and 10,000 troops arriving in Israel for exercises. And then you have the Iranians having more exercises to close the Straits of Hormuz. So I take it our conversation is not going to improve this picture, right?
In fact, there are further complications. The turmoil in Syria might well spill over into Lebanon. And in Lebanon, Syria has an ally that is Hezbollah, that in order to forestall the collapse of the Assad regime, may itself ignite some sort of violence. So I agree, the picture is truly very, very grim.
So what is happening in Cairo with the Arab League foreign ministers meeting the Saudis and the Qataris, along with the Egyptians? Apparently, the Qataris and are driving, and so the Saudis, are driving an effort to make these so far toothless monitors actually do their work. They're also talking about maybe bringing in UN human rights monitors as well. What's your latest understanding of where things stand from these Cairo talks?
Well, the Arab monitors have not done a very satisfactory job in that, first, they are not experts at verifying the stipulations of the Arab Initiative, which call on the Assad regime to withdraw tanks and heavy equipment from cities, call on the Assad regime to release political detainees, to allow foreign journalists in, and to cease using lethal force against civilian demonstrators. The Assad regime has violated every one of these stipulations. The meeting today in Cairo calls on supporting these Arab monitors, including, of course, to bring in some UN expertise to these Arab monitors. And the monitoring mission is going to continue in Syria. But again, thus far, the results have been very, very poor.
Well, it's not surprising, surely. The Arab League team that went into Syria after initially being rejected by the regime, and there, it appears to be some kind of a compromise was worked out, it's headed by a Sudanese general who apparently is a former military intelligence chief involved in organizing the Janjaweed militia to conduct genocide in Darfur. So it doesn't exactly give one any sense of credibility to this. Yet you see footage of these monitors being met with Syrian citizens expressing outrage against the regime. So, I mean, what can we expect from them? Do they have any? I mean, they've got to have some decency, surely, to see the glaring facts in front of their face.
Well, you're absolutely right. At first, Syria did not accept this Arab initiative, but only accepted it later as a result of a compromise between those Arab states that support the Assad regime and those other Arab states that do not. The compromise was to head this mission with a man who has, I would say, a very checkered past, one who is really not into humanitarian work, but one that has been responsible for many of the wrongdoings in Darfur. It is as a result of this compromise that we have this this shoddy team of Arab monitors. That said, although most of these monitors, again, come from the states that are supportive of the Assad regime, still in their report, they have reported of the massive violations of the Assad regime of the stipulations that were initiated by the Arab Initiative. So despite being, for the most part, pro-Assadists, they did still manage to give a report that was that condemned the Assad regime.
So, what is happening inside in terms of the Assad regime? I mean, we know how ruthless they are and how they see Syria as their plantation, if you will, and they just simply can't get over the idea that the majority of their people want them out. But there's a substantial number of people who support them, particularly in Damascus and Latakia, and Vali Nasser suggested that it may take a long time to get rid of them, you know, a year or 18 months. I understand that the Assads are also digging in for a full-scale civil war. They're fortifying an area up in the northwestern Alawite Mountains and inviting prominent Alawite families to settle up there, kind of reminiscent of Hitler's mountaintop eagle's nest. What's your understanding of that?
Well, Ian, you're right. This is the Assad family is a family determined to hang on to power. And this is the bottom line. This is what is happening in Syria. It is a family that is determined that Syria is their family farm and that the Syrian people are their cattle. On the other hand, you have a Syrian population that is in an uprising demanding its freedom. You talk about those supporters in major cities like Damascus and Aleppo. I wouldn't go so far as to say they are supporters. I would say that these are people that are sitting on the fence because they are scared of the day after. Now, recall that this Assad family has been in power for the past 41 years. So these people are scared of the future. They have known nothing but the Assad family ruling. That said, yes, the Assad family is trying to consolidate its hold on things, and they are determined to use to the last bullet in order to survive. But I am not as pessimistic as Professor Vali Nasser. I do not think the Assad regime can last that long. I am of the view that we are now talking about a matter of weeks rather than months. After all, the Syrian treasury now is almost deplete, and there are an increasing number of senior figures that are defecting from the regime. I think it's a matter of a short time rather than a long time for this Assad regime to collapse.
Where do you think, though, the Free Syrian Army stands now? I believe they have up to 20,000 fighters. There's a unit coming from Qatar into Antioch in Turkey on the border there that's apparently well-trained from being in Libya that's helping a highly mobile force that's helping the Free Syrian Army, who are largely just defectors, many of whom couldn't even escape with weapons. But my understanding is that there's also evidence just back on the Alawite minority, the 15%, as opposed to the 85% well, not 80, I suppose 80%, what, 5% Christians? Is that about the breakdown?
Well, a bit more Christians, a bit less Alawis. Yeah. I would say 10% of the total population, 10 to 11% is Alawi.
So, but I understand that in some of the really violent areas like Homs and Hama, dozens of Alawite village chiefs have made deals with the Free Syrian Army, and they've refused to allow Assad's Shahiba to grab their sons to join in the killing.
You know, this is a complex situation. It's not black and white. It's not Alawi versus Sunni and vice versa. There are a large number of Alawis who are also resentful of this regime. And there are many Alawis, including in the armed forces, that would like nothing better than to defect. But again, you know, they live in fear. They are held hostage by the Assad regime. They fear for the safety of their families and so on. So you're right. There are many Alawis against the Assad regime, as there are many Alawis that are supportive of the Assad regime, and many Sunnis that are supportive of the Assad regime. So again, it is not black and white. But the longer these atrocities go on in Syria, the more likely there will be a civil war. And so this is really now, the ball is in the court of the international community to somehow try to intervene in order to avert such a tragic situation.
So is that likely to happen with these meetings in Cairo of the Arab League to make this monitoring group more effective? Because at the end of the day, the more effective the monitoring group, the worse it is for the Assads, right?
That's correct. And this is why I think the Assad regime has absolutely no interest in abiding by those demands of the Arab League, because should the Assad regime stop shooting at civilians, should it withdraw tanks from cities, should it allow foreign journalists in, what you are going to have now is even a more emboldened population that is going to come out in the streets, and that would spell the end of the Assad regime. So I am of the view that despite the improvements that will take place within the Arab monitoring mission, that nonetheless, the Assad regime will continue violating its stipulations, and that is going to enable the international community to step in.
But how does the, just in closing, how does the international community step in? Through the United Nations?
Through the United Nations. There are many ideas out there, the establishment of safe havens, the establishment of buffer zones, the establishment of corridors in order to ship goods, food, water for a civilian population that in many, many towns have been denied these things by the Assad regime in order to deter them. So there are a lot of ideas out there. If this is not done through the United Nations, I suspect that Turkey to the north is going to likely intervene in some fashion, because there are, again, thousands of Syrian refugees that are already in Turkey, and there are thousands more, I suspect, on their way. So Turkey truly has an interest in putting a stop to this, and the worse the situation becomes, I think the more enticement for Turkey and the rest of the international community to intervene.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Dr. Muraf Shujati.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Muraf Shujati, a Syrian-born specialist on Middle East affairs, particularly Syrian politics. He's currently a professor of Middle East studies at the National Defense University's Near East South Asia Center for Strategic Studies. He's also a lecturer in political science and international affairs at George Washington University, as well as a scholar at the Middle East Institute in Washington, D.C. So what did we learn on Background Briefing today? Actually, most of the program was really about what could happen in this election year, as the Republican candidates clearly are tripping over each other to be the first to bomb Iran. You've got naval exercises in the Gulf. The Iranians have just announced that they're going to have another exercise to close down the Straits of Hormuz. The Americans and Israelis are conducting an exercise at the same time. The Russians have just deployed a fleet into Syrian ports, beginning to feel a bit like the Cold War all over again. So we spoke with CIA Officer Robert Baer, who I spoke with some time back, where we created quite a stir talking about Netanyahu's determination to attack Iran and concern on the part of Israeli intelligence officials. Well, the scenario now is so much, first of all, everything that we said back then has proven to be correct, but now the mixture is even more incendiary and much, much more likely to lead to war, at the very least of a huge spike in oil prices, which of course is a nightmare for Obama running in this election year. Vali Nasser, who just was serving in the Obama administration as a chief advisor to the special representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan, he followed up, and he was actually, I think, in many ways more convincing that a war was almost inevitable because we're pushing Iran's back to the wall. And they have nowhere to go. If you cut off their oil, their money from their oil, that's an act of war as far as they're concerned. So unlike Bob, who said that he thought the Iranians were acting irrationally, Vali Nasser said, no, they're actually acting rationally, and they are, in fact, in a state of war. And finally, we talked about what's happening in Syria, whether these Arab League monitors are actually going to have any real ability to look into things. And of course, the answer is the Assad regime will never allow that to happen. So that situation could, in fact, be a part of the overall Middle Eastern tinderbox as well. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.